So we're kind of live now. I think it's afternoon. Good afternoon, folks. This is John Johnson on Radio EduTalk at the OER 16 conference in Edinburgh. In the room at the moment, I have got a noisy switch. I've got Anne-Marie Scott, who is Head of Digital Learning Applications and Media, University of Edinburgh, at EME Newt. And I've also got Jim Groom, who did a barnstorming keynote for us this morning here at the conference. Good afternoon, folks.
Hello.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. And I think probably your interests cross over in a more technical realm than some of the people we've been talking to today. Jim, you were talking about how you deliver access to technology to people in a way that's not locked down. And I'm probably not confident to talk about some of the things, the stuff you were moving on to do, but Anne-Marie is. Do you want to give us a wee sort of very short pre-say of the sort of area you're thinking about, Jim, and then Anne-Marie can maybe jump in with a question or two?
Absolutely. So I think it was part of the interest and struggle I had a little bit with today's keynote. I mean, I assume that DS106, you know, is a fun community infrastructure and people have some sense of it, but I also forget that, you know, a lot of people have no idea what it is, so that's just fun to talk about. But I think what was cool for me and also a struggle that I hope we could talk about is the infrastructure piece of DS106 was using open tools like WordPress to imagine that. And what I learned in the last couple of years, too, I would say, is, you know, we have a whole new agile infrastructure that's starting to kind of present itself with stuff like Docker containers. Brian Lim and Grant Potter just gave a great talk on Sandstorm. The idea of just cloning simple WordPress tools like Splots, as they talked about, smallest possible learning online tools, for me, suggests the idea of thinking about open educational infrastructure rather than the kind of what has been the simplest and most, for me, uninteresting as the open educational resource, as textbook or as text. And that might be my own proclivity, given that I'm a technologist, but I'm interested in how to make this changing infrastructure apparent to folks, but I also am very conscious that I'm failing on it consistently in my talks to make it clear and to make what I'm trying to express. And this is my third time trying to do it. And the previous two, I just stopped talking about containers because it failed. This time, I was pushed off the stage because I was taking too much time, which is fair, and that was good. Lorna kind of saved me. But I would love to talk with you, Emery, about this very thing and how you, as a technologist and as a leader of a group that has to struggle with these very issues, are imagining it and what struggles you run into, and are they at all shared with kind of making this stuff clear and apparent? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think the thing I'm struggling with at this conference, as well as in my day-to-day life, is that tension between people having personal responsibility and agency to be their own archivists, to take control of the web, to take control of their stuff on the web, and then the kind of digital literacy skills that are required for them to do that, the space and the resources that we need to give them such that it feels safe for them to do that.
Yeah.
And I find myself quite conflicted about a lot of the stuff Brian Lam has been talking about, which is, in one sense, I love it. It's about lowering the barriers to using these fantastic open source tools. And on the other hand, I think it's just another form of the same thing we've been doing, which is packaging it up so it's nice and it's pretty and it's not scary and giving it to people. And I think we should be putting people in the scary place a little bit more. But then we don't get the same sort of engagement as we want with these. So that's my tension. That's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm struggling with day to day. And that's why we keep peddling VLE, is our...
It's absolutely right.
Because it reduces back down to that.
I think you brought up a point that for me really resonates in terms of, A, yes, there is that tension. And B, part of one of the ways through that tension is through the notion of, it is a messy part of a curricular issue that we have to struggle with as educational technologists, as educators and the students. Like, we should be in a situation where we need to understand to some degree how the web works, how data is moved from one place to the other, how we're being commodified in this new architecture and ecosystem. So I do, for me personally, think that giving people a domain and forcing them to think through that is part of a curriculum. But I don't think it necessarily always makes sense outside of that curriculum. Does that make sense? Like, the idea of throwing a domain and web hosting at someone and saying, go make a great application that's going to make our student or faculty rich, or like, I mean, our school rich and bring money. Like, that's this kind of weird dream vision that has nothing to do with the actual curriculum around which a platform like that could be built. So for me, it only makes sense within the context of an institution and a curriculum of people imagining and building, and then hopefully magic happens. But there is some basic teaching that needs to happen around it. Does that make sense?
No, that does make sense. And I guess where I'm coming from on this is some of the conversations that have been going on over the last day and a half about OER sustainability. And I think your comments about taking control of your own archive and taking control of the stuff that you create is a potential solution in that space. And that's where it bleeds outside of the curriculum, that the things that you do, you want them to persist. And the only person really you can trust to do that for you is you. And your point about, you know, the way this will only scale at the level of the individual. If all this stuff we are all putting so much effort into creating and curating and licensing openly so that lots of other people can use it, if we want it to live, we've got to be hands-on in keeping it out there.
So I just was talking to Martin Poulter in here the other day, and one of his concerns about this was about licensing. And as a Wikipedian, he sees things needing to be licensed as completely free to use. Maybe, I think, attribution and public domain are only things that Wikipedia takes. And I think this maybe points to the same sort of problem, is that if I, as an individual, created a great resource, I look after my domain and all the rest of it, and then I die, or I decide I'm fed up with the internet and take up surfing, it's like, you know, what happens to that stuff? Is that an issue as well, especially for a university?
Totally. I wrote some notes on my laptop this morning about the idea of, you know, I was thinking about this idea of your personal archive, your personal digital archive. The natural end point of that to me is some sort of process for legal deposit of that archive. You know, people die and give their papers to people. Surely we're going into a place where people die or move on and gift their digital archive to somebody. I don't know who. That's the bit that needs to be
figured out. And I think about that. I agree with that. And I think, like, for me, it would be my kids. Like, I would want my kids to have just access to some of my thinking. Like, simple blog posts, stuff I wrote about them, like, almost like a picture book. Like, I like the idea that the videos and the images and our life in this last 10 years has been narrated partially online. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of their heritage. Like, I don't think a library is going to want anything I have to say. I don't think any of that's going to be interesting to the general public. But I do think there's probably three or four people who it may have some real value for. And I like that. Like, I like thinking in those small scale terms around, because I think for all of us, like, we have stuff that we want to preserve in some ways. Like, I hope John doesn't go surfing. Like, I hope he decides that some of the really cool stuff he's created is a valuable tool that he'll preserve, even if just for a few people who've been his fans, or even for people who come after him and say, look, this was a really good idea, how do I build on it? And I think sometimes we get caught up with the scale of the web and forget that it is actually at its best a communal space for us to build on, and it's smaller than we can imagine in some ways. It's bigger than we could ever imagine, but it's also smaller.
But that comes right back down to that question of ownership straight away, then, doesn't it? If you want to be able to gift your stuff or leave your stuff to somebody, you've got to own it in the first place.
It's true. Absolutely.
So it's right back to, you know, having your own domain, having ownership of your own data.
Well, I saw too on Twitter that, you know, because I'm a big fan, I stalk you on Twitter, and I saw that you actually you noted about the whole personal API and not taking inventory and taking stock. Am I right with that?
Yep.
And I was really struck by that personally when Kinlay talked about that, because what that meant in a very simple way, and again, I love the simplicity of this. It's like, I just got to set up a spreadsheet and see where all my data is. Mm-hmm. And then come up with some sort of strategy that could be very simple to actually think through this. And I think what's cool about it is the archivist in me is really excited about it, but also it will lead me on an exploration through my own thinking, a reflective practice. And I think any student or faculty member or staff can relate to the idea, apart from this is educational or this is serious tech or this is something you have to do. Like, okay, you have a world out there that you've created. How are you planning on kind of organizing it? Like, that to me is a cool question that a school, a university could build a course around.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, and make it compelling and hands-on and maker-ish and have fun.
Yep. No, I think there's definitely something in there about mapping your digital footprint. And
absolutely,
I will send you some links. I'm not going to even try to talk about some work. Well, I think it might already exist. I'm not even going to try and explain it, but I'll send you on some stuff that some of our colleagues have been doing in that space.
I think it's brilliant.
I think that idea of a simple exercise that you can do to work out where your stuff is, and then at the very least make conscious choices about what you do, is a great place to start, even if you're never going to be the kind of person that can stitch your own environment together at a kind of codey level.
Now, a point you brought up, and I think it's a really good point, and it's one that I continue to struggle with, and David, actually, who I never liked, David Kernahan, just for the record, never liked him, he brought this up during the keynote, and I think the point was really well taken, was the socks. There was never, can I just make an aside here? There was never any DS-106 socks. That's just a fiction.
They can't remember socks.
Okay. There are socks somewhere. They're still being knitted. That's why I came up here to get the wool. But
I'm going to make you some DS-106 socks and post them to you.
Don't ever commit. I committed and I'm still never going to live it down. But I think the point I was going to make, do you remember what the point was?
I think we got lost in socks.
There, that's David's fault. So he's not here.
Better done than that. Let's be lost with that. Trying to think, is it at all interesting?
Yeah, I think we're talking about the possibility of people archiving their own stuff, and if you have spread your stuff, and this is the way I'm thinking about it, is I've spread my stuff over lots of different places. How do I get that back? How do I get control over that? And I don't know if you're interested, you know, the IndieWeb Posse people.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they talk about having one site and pushing everything out. Now, the only problem with that, to my sort of simplistic...
Just wait me up here next to you, Melissa. And
it should be back.
We'll someone was just delivering the socks. So you know, the socks are actually here now.
So the interface for that. The interface for Twitter is a very good interface on several devices for posting.
Yeah.
If I have to go into my sort of WordPress blog to make you know, an update, I've got to decide that's a status update, make it that kind of post. I've got to write it in WordPress and tweet it, and it automatically gets tweeted because it's that kind of post.
Yeah.
Or if I've got to upload every photograph I want to go to Flickr through Known.
Yeah.
I'm tired now, you know.
Yeah, and you don't do it.
Yeah.
The thing, too, and I talked to Ben and Aaron, who created Known, and Ben, I guess, is a University of Edinburgh.
Yeah, we know Ben, too.
Former employee. But for me, one of the issues there is I'm going to actually post on Twitter because that's where I'm reading the tweets.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that to have that work, it would also have to be an abstracted reader. So you'd have to see your community in all its different places and be able to respond at the point. Because I'm going to use my Known at the point of when I read and respond, because I'm excited to see something you do and I respond. Or I'm excited and I favorite something you wrote because I want to respond. I'm not going to go back to Known, record all that, and then do it. So for me, the idea of design and ease of use still becomes really radical. And this is the point I was going to make, and I'm kind of working back around to it, because I think for our work, I think Anne-Marie, you and I share a certain amount of kind of, when I was at Mary Washington and now you're at Edinburgh, and even as working with institutions at Reclaim, one of the struggles we have is how do we make this both personal and possible, but easy and seamless?
Yep.
Because I still think there is a role of easy and seamless to make this widely adapted. And I think that's where the SPLOT is attractive. But I do think the limits of the SPLOT, like you said, are, well, then where's your personal archive? And it's someone else WordPress comments, and you're never going to get that out. But, like, so where does seamless and easy meet with institutional and enterprise?
Yeah.
It's a real struggle.
It's a really big struggle. And I think you're spot on the money with this question of, do you push out or do you pull in your stuff? Because I think there's a big thing about context there. And I'm quite torn about what's the limit of your stuff? If it's three or four tweets in a long chain of a conversation, what's useful to archive there?
Yeah.
Not those three or four tweets, that whole conversation. So what's the limit of what you want to be in your archive? There's some stuff around the context in which you're working that needs to be pulled in, which then gets very complicated because you're into stuff that belongs in other people's archives as well.
It's crazy.
That gets very messy, but yeah.
I'm playing with a tool right now, and you turned me on to it, John. Called Amber, which was the WordPress. It's basically like scraping your site for links in other sites. And it becomes a kind of personal archivist tool. And you can send it to Amazon S3. You can send it to the Internet Archive, what have you. And that, for me, is something that I care about. Like, I care about trying to preserve as much of that context, which could be as simple as a link, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm talking about something and I'm linking to John. John goes surfing. His site goes away. I still have a copy of it. So when you're trying to do research, which you'll never do, about something I wrote, you will have some of that context.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I do think that this promise of the LMS or post-LMS era, this kind of infrastructure of the future, being disaggregated, but allowing us to have a box where we push into and send it to those various tools, like Known is doing, mm-hmm. is a good model. Like, Known provides a really compelling model for what's possible,
mm-hmm.
but I do think we still need the context and the community around it and on top of it, so we don't feel like we're going to a million places to do our work for various classes. So that's the piece for me that's missing, is just what you're saying, the context and the layer of that community online we seek out. Right, because we do it in relationship to others, not just to do it. Like,
yeah,
I'm not archiving in a vacuum.
Absolutely.
So, I'm just kind of, do you think we could sort of wrap up there as we've got a really complicated future, but you both can see possibilities which involve stuff going out, stuff coming in, everything being easy and linked, yeah? And it's how to do that is the real the struggle.
I think that's the vision that's being set out in things like the SurfNet document that you highlighted and the work that EDUCAUSE have done as well about the next generation digital learning environment. These layers of APIs, of personalization, of usability, it's a hard problem to crack, but it is where we're going.
I agree. And it's a fun one to actually, my last slide, which I was going to try, but obviously it was a train wreck at the end, was a slide from a famous guy, the one with Jeff Spicoli. Jesus, why am I forgetting it? Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Bad American high school film. And he's like, my dad's got a wicked set of tools, man. We can fix it. Like, I believe that with the people in the room and the kind of the group of people who we've kind of brought after this, because let's face it, the funding, that went away.
Yeah.
And, like, those who were here for the funding probably are gone. And so you have people who've been in this space for many a year who are committed. And now, for me, would be a great time to come together and just not bite off that whole problem of what this new virtual learning environment will look like. Just a couple.
Yep.
Just a little few pieces that Edinburgh does, that Reclaim does, maybe that TRU does. Whoever is part of this community that's distributed, like with DS106, just chips away at. And soon enough, we'll probably have something compelling enough to push us to a next level, rather than wondering about how do we enterprise it? How do we solutionize it? How do we make it the next shiny tool?
That's got to be the way to do it, because we're not trying to rebuild the homogenous big box LMS. Exactly. And if we're not trying to do that, it is piecemeal, it is small. Cool.
Thank you very much. That was brilliant. Just lovely. And I'm going to hang up now, and we should be back shortly with some other people to talk to. Thanks for listening.